This week, station WSPD here in Toledo. Each Saturday afternoon, we present a story of this nation, one region's civic life, its industries, its people, with the voices of the people themselves recorded during a week's work in the field. To gather this material, NBC has a special broadcasting and recording unit constantly in action, headed by W.W. Chaplin and other veteran NBC reporters. It covers our nation section by section to bring you the story of our land as the people see it and tell it. Today, after a week's work during which he has recorded the voices of the people and their activities in the Toledo and Akron regions, Mr. Chaplin presents the story of two of industry's great feeder cities. Mr. Chaplin.
This region of Ohio is fortunate in that because of diversification, it is not dependent on any one industry for prosperity, though many industries are almost completely dependent on it. Toledo and Akron are two of the greatest supplier cities. In Toledo, for instance, there are 556 manufacturing plants, and they range all the way from food processing to printing to glass and to automotive parts. It's impossible to say how much of the average automobile is made in Toledo and Akron, the big rubber town, but certainly if all the parts that come from these two supply centers were choked off by strikes or raw material stoppage, few automobiles could then run off the assembly line even vaguely looking like automobiles. In Detroit last week, Report on America brought you the voices of a high United Automobile Workers official and the chairman of the Ford Motor Company bargaining chairman concerning the pension plan now being promoted through industry by the CIO. The unions are talking volubly, seeking the approval of public opinion. The Ford executive was willing to talk because the Ford company has accepted a pension plan and was ready to answer criticism that it had thereby forced a pattern for pensions on the whole industry. Other automobile manufacturers with pension negotiations underway or in the near future preferred to remain silent. I found industry in Toledo and Akron, too, more ready to talk in advance of negotiations, making their own bid for favorable public opinion. The CIO's UAW has announced a pension plan for the Toledo area affecting 65 automotive firms to be struck one at a time if negotiations fail. Industrialists met a week ago in closed-door session, and published reports were that they had decided to fight. On my request for a statement in the voice of industry itself, leading industrialists held another meeting and finally decided to speak. They appointed as their spokesman Forrest H. Pfeiffer, executive director of the Toledo Research Bureau. That's an organization of Toledo industry leaders banded together for consultation on such matters as wages, labor relations, and policies generally. So I took my recording equipment to Mr. Pfeiffer's office in the new $250,000 Chamber of Commerce building with its all-glass front. Mr. Pfeiffer told me,
Mr. Chaplin, it has been my pleasure in recent days to thoroughly discuss with a number of Toledo manufacturers whole age security for employees in Toledo. The men I contacted indicated strongly that their first concern for their workers was job security. They pointed out that job security, so important to everyone, can only be sustained by their companies being in a strong competitive position with other firms within their industry. In almost every instance, the manufacturer was of the opinion that employee welfare and security plans must be patterned to the economic position of the individual companies. This is so because of the diversity of manufacturing within our city, the various sizes of our plants, the keenly competitive markets, and other factors which affect business stability. One manufacturer stated that any change in current security or welfare plans in existence today would cause an increase in cost to the company, which we all know would have to be reflected in the selling of its products. The honeymoon is over. Toledo today finds it difficult to meet competitive markets. It is understood that every Toledo company is studying ways and means of reducing costs to not only meet competition, but to stay alive and, most important of all, provide work for their employees. More than one manufacturer with whom I discussed this subject believes the answer to old age security may lie in the proposed revision of Social Security benefits as adopted last week by the United States House of Representatives. This proposed revision affords the most realistic approach towards old age financial security and only needs adoption by the United States Senate and the signature of the President. Again, I wish to reiterate what the manufacturers I contacted told me when we discussed retirement benefits. They said the most important things of all are employee job security and the life of the organization. We know that these two important facts of life cannot be maintained in our economic system if there is a great drain on financial resources of manufacturing plants.
So, says Mr. Pfeiffer, the honeymoon is over. Whatever effect it may have on current negotiations, it is a message of import from the management side of the pension controversy. Toledo is many things to many people. On its cultural side, the concerts in the great open-air amphitheater in the zoological gardens along the Maumee River. City planning is shown in the great new Union Station being built by the New York Central to replace the antique station, which discouraged so many travelers. The city has built beautiful approaches, and the new station will be in business next year. Toledo also, besides its manufacturing industries, is, or rather was, and will be again, the greatest coal shipping port in the world. Right now, the great coal docks on Maumee Bay are quiet, the freighters lie idle, and many people are out of work because of the coal strike. Apparently, the city's industries were far-sighted in advance of steel and coal strikes, and I found that because of large stockpiles, the city's factories have not so far felt serious pinch. That condition, of course, has its limit. In addition to supplying the automobile industry with metal parts and electrical appliances, in addition to its normal activity as the great coal shipping port, in addition to being home of the largest manufacturer of oil field equipment, in addition to all that, Toledo boasts of itself also as the glass capital of the world. And the glass business is booming, though over that industry, too, lies the shadow of possible strikes due to breakdown of pension negotiations. As an example, one of the largest glass companies, Libby Owens Ford, last year exceeded by 14% its all-time 1947 record for net sales, and this year is running well ahead of last year. Some of the glass business is still done by the old method of blowing molten glass from long tubes for such things as vacuum tubes and certain ornamental objects. But the great bulk of the industry makes sheet glass now, much as molten steel is rolled into sheets. I visited the biggest plate glass factory anywhere, the Libby Owens Ford plant, at the Toledo suburb of Rossford. Most interesting, if you have never seen a glass factory, as I hadn't, I found to be the inspection and cutting plant. Before that, the sand and other ingredients that make glass were cooked in furnaces which seemed to me far more awesome even than steel furnaces. The molten glass flowed through several processes, was drawn into large corrugated plates of rough glass, ground, polished, and moved on conveyors to the inspection and cutting plant. There, men worked unconcernedly while quarter-inch sheets of glass, 10 by 15 feet in dimension, were swung over their heads by overhead cranes, held from falling only by 8 suction plates. The cranes laid each of these plates on a padded table for inspection. Then the cutters slipped the big sheets of glass into blocks of a desired size to meet different orders from construction or automobile firms. And incidentally, while diamonds are used to some small extent to cut certain types of rough glass, the ground and polished glass is cut in one movement with a small steel wheel drawn across the glass by hand. I recorded this process, the slicing, the breaking of the glass along the cut, and the tinkling crash as end trimmings fall into iron baskets for later remelting. As you listen to this, remember that the men you hear at their jobs are working under the great sheets of glass, swinging above them in their suction clutch like the blades of a giant guillotine. Listen. After that ceaseless process, the cut blocks of glass are wheeled away, ready to be installed as picture windows in your home, as mirrors, or in a dozen other ways. The great majority, however, goes to the automotive industry. With all those walls of glass swinging through the air and being chopped up as you heard it going on, you might think that the accident rate might be inordinately high. Actually, it's exceedingly low. As one official at the plant told me, after a man has worked here just a few hours, he comes to have a healthy respect for glass. In Akron, I investigated another type of industry. Naturally, rubber, as Akron is well known as rubber's hometown. The rubber industry is not booming like glass, but is going through what seems a healthy leveling off after the 1947 peak when war scarcity was filled. In 47, the industry made 78 million passenger car tires. Last year, 67 million, and this year the estimate is for 65 million. The greatest new development in the tire industry is the growth in tires for farm tractors, formerly largely iron-shod. In 1941, the industry made only a little more than 2 million farm tires. This year, it will make almost 5 million. There are several mammoth tire companies in Akron, but because the Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company is now engaged in pension negotiations with the United Rubber Workers of the CIO, I visited that plant and had a talk with Goodyear President E.J. Thomas. Mr. Thomas, will you please tell us, how are things in the tire and rubber business today?
Well, sir, the tire industry is running at a pretty good rate of operation. Not quite as much as last year. I would say that this year will run about 10% less than 48.
And how do you see the prospect for, say, the coming year, Mr. Thomas?
Well, for the coming year, I would think that the renewal demand for tires would be somewhat in excess of this year. In respect to the tires for new cars, or what we call original equipment, I doubt whether they'll continue to run at this maximum rate, but I think that they'll run at a very heavy rate in 1950.
Mr. Thomas, on our travels around the eastern part of the country, the industrial east, we've found, of course, in the past month or two, everywhere, the question of pensions coming up in labor controversies. I understand that rubber, as almost every other big industry, is involved in negotiations now on this matter. Would you tell us, please, how your company and the industry stands at the moment on this matter of pensions?
Well, the question is up with most all of the people in the rubber industry, and in our situation, it is now a matter of negotiation between our unions and the company. We believe in pensions, and those discussions are underway at the present time as to how they could possibly be worked out.
Do you believe that negotiations in the rubber industry can iron out the difficulties and that business has a pretty good chance to continue without serious further strike troubles?
Well, we've always ironed out these matters before in negotiation, and I certainly would be hopeful this time that it would be the same way.
On the whole, then, you think that the outlook for the rubber industry is pretty cheerful?
It isn't at all too bad.
From Mr. Thomas' office, I went to the part of the factory where rubber, the consistency of cold molasses, was being broken down, as the technical phrase is. The rubber dough is put round and round through steel rollers until it's smoothed out to the point where it can be turned into inner tubes. Here's how your tires sound in their formative stage, though it may sound more like bubblegum to you. Start breaking down another batch.
And that concludes the latest chapter on Report on America, a weekly series in which W.W. Chaplin, NBC's roving reporter, has been visiting various sections of the United States to provide us with first-hand reports on the nation today. For this week's report, Mr. Chaplin was aided in gathering and recording material by John Saunders and Frank Venner of the staff of radio station WSPD in Toledo, Ohio. Next week, Report on America will bring us the story of the Farm Belt, our program coming from station WHO in Des Moines with Jack Shelley and Herb Plambeck. Join us then next Saturday at this same time for another Report on America. You are tuned for the stars on NBC.